Good morning, Jerry. Enjoying very pleasant weather here.
Oh, man, we have the prettiest blue skies. I mean, they're really gorgeous, but it's going to get hot here. Now, I hear you're already in the fall up there.
Yeah, it feels like October. I should be going to a football game this afternoon, at least maybe watching it. Not that I'd feel a need to do that, but yeah, baseball, I'll be wearing a light jacket most of the day and thoroughly enjoying the clear, crisp weather of August here in Chicago. So,
yeah, it's nice. It's beautiful. I like that cold weather. And as maybe our listeners don't know, but within, just a number of days, I'm going to be up there in Chicago with you, and we're going to do a live bro show.
Hey, live happening here in River North Chicago, in the close to downtown near the Loop.
I don't know if we should disclose the location because we might get mobbed.
Yeah, we better hold off till we're a little bit closer. I think that'll work better.
All right. Well, you know, got me thinking. The weather got me thinking, and also, you know, events of the last week and everything like that. But you know, I've been thinking, you know, I was talking to my wife about this situation here when, and we're going to talk more about this in detail, but just briefly, you know, it came to my attention that, you know, it's a nipples. Let's just talk a few minutes about nipples. Everybody's got them. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know. We just need to relax. This is okay. So, my wife pointed out to me that we have the most nipple friendly t-shirt in the world at the bro show. So if you've got gynecomastia as a man or teenager, you know, where you got tender nipples, and also then that happens from fluctuations in hormones. I've got a little of that myself. So, you know, and hey, this is the t-shirt for you because it's so soft. Wouldn't you say, John?
I would have to agree with you. I hadn't thought of it because now that I have the shirt on, I didn't even notice I had gynecomastia.
Yeah.
And now I know why.
There it is. Okay. All right.
All good.
Wow. Yeah, all good. Oh, man. So we're going to do two things that are a little different today. We're going to do follow-up, as almost the entire show is going to be follow-up, which is kind of cool. We're going to follow up on the things we talked about earlier. We've done 24 episodes. We started in February, believe it or not. So we've been at this a while, John. It kind of just ticks by. And we're going to pull stuff
up. Time flies when you're having fun.
It does. And so we're going to pull stuff out of the shows and do a little follow-up on those. And then at the very end, we'll do a little foreshadowing. That's exciting.
So, yes, we've got our three categories, sports, film, fake news. Mm. And we're going to then follow that up with an update on, periodically, we will do episodes on cancer, since both of us have cancer. We periodically will talk a little bit about a topic, and we feel that since it's been since the latter part of March that we've addressed this issue, that it's time for, just to kind of bring people up to speed as to what's going on with us and some of the challenges and some of the triumphs that have taken place and the progress we've made over the past several months. So we can get started a little bit with perhaps sports. Why not?
Hey, I think we should start with sports.
Yes, and one of the topics we talked about earlier on was we did sort of a history of mascots in Major League Baseball. And, you know, we talked about in the early 1900s, some clubs, it was socially acceptable to have human mascots. They were sort of like pets, little kids that they could rub their heads to get good luck, etc. Those then moved up to having what we know of today as every club, 28 out of the 30 clubs have mascots. And these are just, you know, guys carting around or women in their various costumes. Some of them look like humans, some of them look like animals, and some of them look like neither of those. And we're not going to try to figure out what those are.
No,
but
we're too young.
What's happened in recent history is we've got sort of a side category, a subcategory that's taking place, and our environment has kind of brought this on. Is as our urban environment is being invaded more by animals, we find that animals are finding their way, four-legged types, two-legged types, into baseball games. And we had an incident take place within the last week
Yes.
And what we'll do is we'll talk about that incident and say, but let's not consider this to be isolated.
No.
It might be just a forerunner of what we can expect to see in the future. So what happened in the past week? Well, it seems that during a game with the Kansas City Royals and the St. Louis Cardinals in St. Louis, this is, I think, Wednesday.
Yes.
The Cardinals were losing the game by a couple of runs in the sixth inning. And they had the bases loaded, and their best baseball player, their most popular player, Yadier Molina, the catcher, was up to bat. And all of a sudden, Yadi noticed there was some commotion in the outfield. So he stepped out the batter's box, pointed his bat towards left field, because what was going on there was a cat that was bouncing around, didn't know exactly where to go, and was kind of making himself, trying to introduce himself to each of the players, and the players on the field didn't seem to be too friendly. So a groundskeeper came out, was able to get the cat off the field, and that in itself has kind of led to a little legend. But as soon as that cat was escorted off the field, Yadi gets back into
the batter's box. Didn't the cat claw someone?
I was going to kind of use that as a little bit of a follow-up, but yeah, we'll talk about that now.
Oh, okay, sorry.
The fact is that the cat was gathered up by a groundskeeper who was not smart enough to wear gloves and got clawed or bit or something. You could see it in the reaction as you take a look at the video. And then they took the cat out, and this is only something that would happen in St. Louis. But right. They ended up letting the cat go right by the Stan Musial statue.
Ooh, that's a sacred
spot. That's where
spot.
They decided to do it. Ooh, that is sacred. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think you could be left off at a more prestigious spot
yes.
around the ballpark than
agreed.
At the base of the Musial statue. So then we move back into the ballpark again where, the cat's no longer there. And Liotti gets up to plate. And the first pitch, he hits a grand slam homer to win the game for the Cardinals.
What field? What field did it go in? Left field or right field?
It went left field. It went to left field, right where he was pointing his bat. Which he was pointing at the cat, but let's face
Babe
it.
Ruth.
You know, if you're pointing at the cat, you're also pointing in the outfield.
Babe Ruth may have been pointing at an animal. You don't know.
Yeah. Hey, look. So since the Cardinals won the game, and they've won every game since then, and this story continues to have legs, and it might, no pun intended, but the fact is that a part of it is working in respect to that. So that's a little bit about the rally, the rally cat as it plays out. Now, who knows what'll happen? Hopefully, that cat will make a big difference. The Cardinals end up right now being a game behind the Chicago Cubs in their division. The Cubs have kind of lost a fair number of games, so it's getting a little tight.
Yes.
And so we'll just see if the rally cat continues to work in the favor of the Cardinals. Now, as we take a look at the history of rally animals, the Cardinals, this is not the first time the Cardinals have been introduced to a rally animal. Back in 2011, before the start of an inning during the postseason of 2011, a squirrel ran across home plate, and that actually happened twice, two different squirrels.
Wow.
And so we ended up having what's called a rally squirrel. Now, this squirrel did definitely have legs, because what happened is the Cardinals, who were hardly favorites, ended up winning that World Series and twice were within one out of losing the series. In the sixth game and in the seventh game, they got timely hits with two outs in the ninth inning to continue on and as a result win and beat the Texas Rangers, which has driven them crazy ever since.
Oh.
So you can see that we've had a rally squirrel. And if you take a look at a ballpark such as Wrigley Field, any ballpark that is close to water has got a lot of seagulls. So if you went to San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
or if you went to, if you're in Chicago here near Lake Michigan, so what we'll often see is that about the sixth or seventh inning, a bunch of seagulls are kind of hovering, not hovering, but they're like basically laying down in the outfield waiting for their supper. because of all the food that's been left, you know, kind of thrown away in the stands. And they're just waiting for the game to finish up so that they can go in there. But the problem is that they're laying on the field. And how do you get, you know, what's going to happen? Well, there have been a couple of situations where players, you know, that the ball goes out in a bunch of seagulls and they start scattering away and the outfielder can't figure out what's going on and he misses the ball or throws it wrong or something. So we find seagulls quite often have an impact on the game.
Non-rally animals.
Non-rally animals. So we have found that animals are finding their way into the ballpark. And we also find that sometimes animals are finding their way out of the ballpark. Wrigley Field is a ballpark that has got a storied history that goes back to 1914. It's old. And as a result, there's a lot of, you know, commotion, this whatever, and there's a lot of food around there. So there it has its more than its fair share of city rats. The rats do congregate in Wrigley. In fact, some of the ballplayers of the opposing teams like to comment that the visitors' clubhouse, which is considered one of the worst in the majors, is rat infested. You know, they've done a nice job of fixing up the home clubhouse, and I think they're in the process of doing it for the visitors' clubhouse. But in the interim, what's happened is there's been a lot of construction at Wrigley. And their construction, the rats don't like it. They don't like the noise. They don't like the inconvenience. So what's happened is that they've lost a lot of their rat population within the ballpark. And those rats have ended up going to closer places nearby. And sure enough, you got the residents are complaining about the fact that the Wrigley rats have now found residents in their homes.
Oh my gosh.
Which is a whole nother episode as to how do we contain rats within the city. We could do a whole doggone thing talking about feral cats, you know, and variety of other ways that are done. But so we've also had sometimes this is pretty sad. Well, players maybe in spring training like to want to dare if they can't hit a flying animal like a bird. And most of the time they can't. But unfortunately, sometimes they do and the feathers fly. Not good. It's very unpleasant. They get in trouble for it too. They've been suspended. They've actually been arrested. Ball players have been arrested for you know, throwing balls at birds. So, And I do believe that as animals are being more forced to the city, as we start developing outside the city limits, we find a natural tendency for animals. I mean, there are a lot of coyotes in the city of Chicago. There are a lot of deer.
Yep.
And it wouldn't surprise me one of these days that, you know, we're going to be talking about a deer out there with a ball player, or a raccoon or a coyote as you know, that can very easily happen. So, that's a little bit on rally animals. It's a follow-up to our sort of our mascot. It's an extension of our mascot.
Yeah, May 27th, we had a mascot less chosen. The mascot less chosen. May 27th, that's when we hit that one. And yeah, it's a fascinating topic. My variety of being a sports fan is a little different than John's. John enjoys the statistics, the quirks, the stuff like that. I'm the same way, but my favorite thing is, as people probably know, listen to podcasts, is fights. I like the.
You like the charges. Peripheral. Let's not get it into its base crudeness, which you do seem to be attracted to. And we'll just kind of call it, you like to see the peripheral of the sport as much as the sport itself.
Plus, I watch every baseball movie, John. I watch every baseball movie.
Good.
I love them. Who's my wife?
Yeah. There have been some excellent movies. You know, that's a whole nother subject matter. Mm. I want to point out one other thing in the category of sports. A follow up. A couple of weeks ago, we did something on parody in golf.
Yes.
And we did it in the middle of the U.S. Open that was being held just outside of Milwaukee. While I was up in Milwaukee watching the Brewers play, and sure enough, Jordan Spieth won that tournament. And kind of broke a little bit the parity and allows us to now have a player that we can look forward to. Jordan Spieth is within one tournament of winning what is called the career Grand Slam.
Ooh.
The Grand Slam consists of the Masters, British Open, U.S. Open and PGA tournaments.
Right.
Jordan has won the first three, and sure enough, the fourth leg of that of the Slam is this week. Jordan is not quite, he's not what you call in great shape, but he's in there giving it his best shot. The tournament is in North Carolina. They've had some weather challenges, so, and that frustrates me to no end to try to figure out where a person stands when they haven't quite finished a round. So I'm just going to let the dust settle, and hopefully they'll all be caught up today. So we'll have three rounds under our belt, and I'd like to see Jordan in contention. The other thing that's kind of interesting about the tournament is quite often you see the waning signs of the past heroes. Phil Mickelson happens to be one of those who has won three of the four and would be a likely candidate to, you know, is in his mid-40s. So he's in his swan song. He's not exactly what you call in the peak of his golf spinning ability, and sure enough, he started out with a 79.
Oh my god!
So it's kind of sad. You're kind of seeing the ending, the vestiges of a great golfer, as we hopefully see Jordan Spieth, maybe somewhere, maybe to this time, maybe next year, getting that fourth leg of a career Grand Slam.
John, so, I've actually got some a baseball follow up for you.
Okay, go ahead.
And this is a bit of a stretch, but hey. It fits into my whole approach to baseball. Our first episode was February 17th, 2017, and the title was Ty Cobb, The Real Story. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Donald Trump hired a lawyer named Ty Cobb.
Yes, he did.
We got that. Okay, we got that going for us. See, there's a follow-up item. And that you know, we'll cover it. Maybe we'll talk about it a little more in fake news, but hey, Ty Cobb.
I would say there's even a greater baseball connection with respect to Trump in that the lawyer that was hired to investigate Pete Rose by the name of Dowd, D-O-W-D.
Oh, that's right.
He did all the dirty work for to come up with all of the, you know, the games that Pete Rose gambled on, this and that and whatever. That lawyer has also been hired by Donald Trump. In terms of being a part of his battery of lawyers that are there to help him in his time of need. I'm not sure exactly what he's sort of, I think, overseeing some of the lawyers. His name, I think, is Bob Dowd.
Yeah.
But yeah, Bob right. has
he's
a.
He's like the head dude. He's the.
Yeah, he's the head dude. Well, his if you look at his background, he Pete Rose is a big piece of it. He did some other work. So, yeah, we have some Donald Trump baseball connections there. Like you point out, they're not exactly direct. But there is something there, no doubt.
Well, the Ty Cobb one I find interesting because how many people were named Ty Cobb?
Yeah, it's, you know, you're right. I mean, there are not a lot of people. I can't, you know, there are not, there, you know, it's easy to, it's kind of interesting. You can easily find out how many Cobbs there are in the majors because you could do a sort of the baseball encyclopedia, the baseballreference.com, and it'll list you all of them with first name Cobb, middle name Cobb, last name Cobb. And what I find most interesting is, and this is a little side note, when it comes to trivia, there's a baseball player whose his first name, his middle name, and his last name are unique. Nobody else has ever had any of those names, and he's a Hall of Famer.
Let's hear it.
And it's Wilver Dornell, D-O-R-N-E-L-L, Stargell, S-T-A-R-J-E-L-L.
Oh.
And Willie is an interesting guy because I had a chance to do some follow-up on him, thinking he might have been a twin when he wasn't. He was married to a twin. And my investigation got me all the way to talking to his sister. And so his sister said to me, could you give me some Willie Stargell trivia, and I was able to lay that on her. She's a school teacher, and I thought it was kind of funny. Yeah, names and words and all of that. We're going to find out words are going to be very important when we get to our third episode section on fake news.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm excited about that. Okay,
so as we take a look, we're going to move on to the movie side, the film side of it, and I think what's nice this week is that we've had several of our segments on films, which we have referred to the Turner Classic Movies. We've done it in terms of our bad girl, bad guy slash bad kid section we did, where we talked about anywhere, anybody from Patty McCormick, you know, as a little girl who was as
March
bad
23rd,
as you can get.
March 23rd, yes. The Bad Seed, that episode.
The Bad Seed episode, which is, you know, that's about as nasty a kid as you're going to come up with. We've also referred to in a variety of things with film war. And when we talked about our favorite film war movies, we referred to those movies quite often being shown on Turner Classic Movies. And we also featured it with Gaslight.
Yes.
Gaslight is was a movie made in the mid-40s. And it was kind of funny because both of us, Jerry knew Gaslight from the terminology. I knew it from the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, the internet terminology. In other words, messing with somebody's mind. And I knew it from the movie in which the star of the movie, Charles Boyer, messes with Ingrid Bergman's mind. And it was so funny the way we were able to kind of connect those two and all of a sudden increase our knowledge.
Yes.
And so Gaslight was kind of interesting. And what we only bring this up because this is the week or the month, excuse me, that TCN, Turner Classic Movies, a cable station that features old movies, it probably has the largest inventory of movies around, features a different star every day. So some of those stars, like example, I noticed that on Sunday we've got Barbara Stanwyck. And although Double Indemnity, one of the classic noir movies, is not featured, one of the noir movies called Strange Love of Martha Ivers is one of my favorites. You're going to find that when they decide to feature one of these stars, they're not necessarily going to pick their greatest movie. And quite often they're movies you've never seen before, and they're kind of interesting. The one that kind of directly connects to what we've done is later in the month, on Saturday, August 19th, Angela Lansbury is featured, and she was in Gaslight. Now you're saying,
yes.
Well, wait a minute, Gaslight, that's Charles Boyer, that's Ingrid Bergman. But the assistant accomplice that Charles Boyer is using, it was Angela Lansbury as a tender teenager, was playing one bad lady. And sure enough, before she's 20 years old, she's got a nomination for an Academy Award. And here, you know, quite often we think of her in terms of her, you know, more recent movie, her TV shows, etc., Angela Lansbury. But she had a very interesting early film career. And she continued that on in a variety of roles. And so if you're interested in kind of the movie history of Angela Lansbury, you can watch on August 19th, take a look at the different movies. And by the way, I recommend you go to TurnerTCN.com. Is the best way to learn more about this. I'm getting one of the last editions of the actual paper guide. I've been informed this is the second to last edition, as I will then, you know, resort to using the internet, which is okay.
Yeah.
Except that there my collection ends as I look at a stack of probably 200 of these guides I've got, but they're fun to look at, and they got crossword puzzles, etc. So, you know, it's nice for us to talk a little bit about a follow-up here on, you know, Turner Classic Movies. It's one of my favorite stations. If you like old movies, it has no commercials, and it has a lot. It has a whole section on Sunday mornings, not featured in the month of August, but after August, they're making a big point. Don't worry, Film War is back on. So at 9 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, they've got a guy named Eddie Muller, who is a incredible expert on film war, and just listening to him introduce and finish up the movies that he features and the background on them is as fascinating as watching the movie itself. So those are just a couple. I'm giving a strong pitch for TCM.
Yeah, that is a strong pitch. You know, I'm just going to add real quickly in terms of films too. There's a phenomenon going on right now on the internet that I had never been party to. My wife introduced me to it. We both enjoy watching Game of Thrones. And there are like several channels on YouTube where these people put together pieces of the episode and explain them in great detail, because the whole Game of Thrones universe is quite complex. And it's hard to follow these plots. And if you haven't watched all seven seasons, these things are tremendously helpful. And I saw one the other day that was just incredible. They had, you'll like this, John. They had these two people Seth Meyers, the guy who has a talk show of
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live fame,
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
this other woman, I can't remember her first name, her last name's Jones, and she is like one of the funniest people you can imagine. She's like from Stockton, and she's, you know, got that whole thing going on with the
Is
language
she
and
an
the
actress or a
patois.
singer or what?
I think, you know, I should have done my research on that. I don't even know who she is. I've never seen her before. But they sit down from time to time and record their reactions live to the episode. Of course, it's heavily edited and spliced, but they're going through it, and like one third of the way through it, one of the guys from the show in costume knocks at the door and they let him in. And her
Oh
mind was
man.
completely blown. She didn't know that was going to happen. Seth Meyers set it up. And it was, oh God, was it hilarious? It was just, oh God. And so, anyways, people are really, really doing creative things with film, as like what John was talking about, the introductions, the follow-ups, the reviews, and all that stuff. It's gotten so much more rich and interesting than I think it ever has before. So you, if you're a film fan, don't stop at the film. You know, everybody knows, oh, I'm going to read the book, right? But there's more. Just go on YouTube. You won't believe what's out there.
I think the resources that allow us to understand some of these movies that are more complex, particularly when one movie is built upon another,
yes,
and we kind of lose something in translation, there's a lot out there that allows us to kind of bridge that gap. And
yes,
you're exactly right. Complexity can be made a lot easier to understand through the resources we have available to us
oh
to do
yeah.
that. When you mentioned Jones and you mentioned Seth Meyers,
Yeah.
my immediate reaction was one of Ted's very intimate friends, Nora Jones.
That's oh yeah.
So I'm sure it wasn't her, but I kept on thinking of how Ted was doing such a good job of palling it up to one of his former conquests in the
Very
movie.
funny. They can, but the,
What a
by the way,
bear,
they
what a
call those
bear.
episodes Game of Jones. Well, no, hold. Instead of Game of Thrones, it's
Game
Game
show.
of Jones. It's pretty funny. I'm gonna look it up real quickly while we're talking here.
Yeah, so you know, when it comes to the movie side of it, I think that's the best follow up we can do. It's a much more it's kind of general, but I think that it's you know it's worthwhile going into. So you know, one of the things that's taken place this last week, as we kind of go into fake news, is the fact that we're bombarded with so much about North Korea that it's almost to the point that you can only watch it for like about 5 seconds. I've had several of my friends say, look, I can't take any more of that. No, it's just, I don't need any more talking heads. I don't need people giving their opinions, this or that. I just am fed up. I had it up to here with North Korea.
Right.
So the point being that as we took a look at it, we're trying to figure out what it reminded me of what's kind of going on. And so my game plan is usually to pick a news station, any news station, flip it on, give it 5 seconds, and turn it onto something else that fast. I give it 10, maybe if I'm nice, I might give them 10 seconds.
I believe in
well,
the
I
morning
haven't...
your go-to is Leave It to Beaver. Is that correct? Or Perry Mason?
Yeah, it's a fallback. That and Perry Mason are a couple of things that I'll watch old TV series rather than watch the NSNBC, even unless Mika is on and talking a lot. She's a big part
Micah.
Of the show with
Yeah,
Joe.
Micah.
Mike, excuse me. If Mike is on, then
Micah?
I might
Micah?
Keep it on. Micah, I forget. One of the other. Well, you know, that nice, that well-preserved blonde.
nice term. Yeah, John and I have a thing for Mika. You told me the other day you were transfixed by Joe's hair one day. You were hypnotized by it. You couldn't believe you were trying to figure out how gravity worked with it.
Yeah,
Robert?
It was looked like one of those things where you put a comb through it, and it was sort of like the comb was
stays
staying
there.
There, or the comb as it was leaving was the hair was still attracted to the comb. It was really strange. So yeah, I mean it's interesting as we get so tired of content, we end up gravitating towards such
yes.
ridiculous stuff. Although I would call his,
but Mika's not ridiculous.
I was just going to point that out.
But Joe is.
She's the exception to the rule. So it happened to be where there
Agreed.
Was a talking head woman on who had been within the last 6 months over to North Korea. And she commented, well, so somebody, well, how's that over there in North Korea? And they said, well, it's like you're on another planet. You're in a different world. You're not here. And it reminded me of the importance of communication, and particularly when you're dealing with something which is so out of this world as North Korea. So I
Correct.
It brought me back to something I don't think we used in a podcast, but we probably should have. And that is a movie that came out that I felt had some Academy Award worthiness to it, called Arrival. It was a movie
Yes.
starring Amy Adams. And this movie did win one Academy Award for sound editing, but we both were enthralled by it. I think you saw it more than once.
I saw it three times. Yeah, this was early in my diagnosis and all that stuff, and not that long after our son had gotten killed. So my friend said, I don't know if you should see this, you know, and without spoiling, well, we're spoiling movies all left
yeah.
and right all the time anyway. There's the death of a child in it, death of a child. So some of my friends says, don't go see it. But I tend to kind of walk into the fan while it's running. I'm that kind of guy. So I just went and I loved it. And my adopted son, Jay, took me to see it three times. He saw it three times with me.
The whole idea of there being a lost son in the movie is, it's a little,
lost
it's
daughter.
Kind of daughter. Was it? To me, it was very subtle.
Yeah. It was subtle. It was very
done,
lightly done.
And it was in the focus of the, and it was not what I would call the central focus, although it's important. It's a critical element to the person, to Amy Adams and her relationship to her husband. But the bottom line is that what really captures you with this movie was the fact that you had these 12 different space, I wouldn't call them ships, I don't know what they were, that have placed themselves in places on the world, and the challenge was going to be able to communicate with what kind of form of life was in these different things. Yeah. It's hard to
yes.
say. So they got a language expert together to work with doing it, and what comes out of all of this is the importance of communication and your ability to come down to a basic language that everybody understands.
Yes.
Because we know the English language has words that have a variety of meanings within their context, with the way that we say them, the inflection, etc. Can you imagine when we have as many different languages in the world, and we're dealing with that we're dealing with something very, and what it points out is that our survival as a civilization is part of it is going to be a critical component is going to be able to come up with a means of communication, which is so basic, a basic language that we all feel comfortable communicates what we want it to communicate. And that's what you get out of the movie. And it's just such,
it's so huge.
It's so huge, but it's so obvious that it's just,
yes.
it is a remarkable. And what's happening now, it just, to me, points out the fact that I would suggest that anybody who's new in any, that's part of the negotiating team, be locked into a movie theater and made to watch this movie.
Yes.
Even
if it requires Clockwork Orange kind of paraphernalia to hold your eyelids open, this is
yeah.
the thing they need to see. Anybody on Trump's team or anyone else's team going in there. Because context is so important, too. It's not just content. It's context. And I think not just North Korea, but I mean, a lot of the traditional problems we've had with the French
yeah.
have been all around context.
Yes.
We you know, and even the British, we... You know, we're separated by a common language.
Yeah.
You know, it's so important. And I think our tendency, unfortunately, you know, we had a little success with World War II. We went in there and And we really did a good job. The United States, it was one of its brightest shining moments. But at the same time, I think we just took it too seriously. And, you know, there's this automatic thing that any softer aspect of language, like context, is considered lightweight. And it's just not something to even be considered. You're always just looking for a threat. That's the MO. Yeah. And that's not going to work. Just not going to work. They're not doing this just for fun. They're going somewhere with this. They want to feel safe. They want to have their place in the world. So find a way to get that. But now, you know, it's a little late for a lot of these options because their program's already developed.
Yeah, well, the thing is that what we've done is we've basically shown disrespect to Korea. And we've done that by the way of saying Korea is a third world country at best, because it doesn't have the resources. And if it doesn't have resources, it isn't worthy of us even considering. And we've maintained that attitude as we've been more concerned about the Middle East, which has oil. So therefore, we concentrate on that as an area of concern. And so here we are. You're talking Bush. We've got how many? So what have we had? Yes. We've had several presidents, whatever. So the point being, that I think the fact that we just our approach towards the problems, and it's sort of like, well, Korea can't be. We have not taken North Korea seriously until recently.
During Clinton's reign, that they had a guy go in there and get the thing straightened out, and then they had a deal all but signed, and then Bush came into power and said we've been too light on North Korea, and he tore the whole thing up.
Sorry, excuse me. Yeah. Didn't mean to say that, but it is a little annoying. Yeah, so we are, you know, language and the way that we basically communicate is so critical. And it's, you know, like you said, who knows where we are right now with respect to it. It's just a shame that people didn't really think hard about this before we are where we are right now. And
we've done some pretty good, stuff on Korea in the past. We talked about, you know, the inner culture of North Korea, and several people have gotten out, have talked about it and stuff like that. And then we did the tallest unfinished building, which is, that's just like, as you said, it's emblematic of North Korea. They've got this, if you look at our April 18th episode, you'll see a picture of this really crazy looking building that is unfinished. And it looks like it's from another planet, literally.
Yeah, it's a hotel that you're going to be staying on the first four or five floors of this hotel, because beyond that, they haven't finished it yet. It's well over 100 stories. It's one of the tallest. I have this thing about tall buildings that as a child I did with building blocks, would make my own skyscrapers, and I would always keep track of the history of skyscrapers as to the tallest building. The tallest building torn down, this and that. These are all different categories I would come up with. And sure enough, that's how I came up with this Korea building, because it hit one of my lists. I don't know which one. But I also think I worked for 2 years for South Korea, a company called Samsung, which is pretty well known now. When I started working there, it wasn't a household name like it is now. And it's a sad situation, because it's amazing how naive a U.S. person can be about a situation. So I was talking to some of my coworkers from Korea about the Korean War and the fact, I said, well, first thing is the Korean War isn't over with. It's in a state of they're just at a state of a ceasefire.
Suspended animation.
Right now. And they're at a point where so it's not officially over with. But the bottom line is, that I said, well, it must have felt pretty good when it was all over. He goes, no, that was one of the worst days of our lives. That meant that our families we would never see again were on the other side.
Yep, absolutely.
And so you just have no sense of the, and you're talking about, whether you're talking about North Korea, South Korea, or Korea in general, you're talking about a country that has been trampled over in the history of the world, you know, too many times to count, by whether it be the Japan, China, Russia, whatever. It's always been kind of browbeaten and beat up. It's kind of been given the Japanese consider them to be garlic barbarians. They won't say that to their face, but
yeah, that's the word. That's what they call them, garlic
and
barbarians.
And so it's, you know, when you think about how Korea thinks of of itself, and it maybe says, like, it's sort of, you got to say, this is like the Rodney Dangerfield of countries. Show me some respect. I can tell you right now, I spent a year in Vietnam, and the most respected soldiers in Vietnam were Koreans. And the reason was because they were the most vicious soldiers. They took no prisoners. They made a point of basically, if they captured somebody, an enemy, they'd cut their head off and stick them on a fence post.
A pike. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
They were to be beyond respected. They were too much.
Yeah, Genghis Khan approach. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it well, worked, let's say. In other words, it impressed me at least.
Yeah, yeah. Well, an approach like that, which is kind of, it's the madman approach. And that's one of the things that they're talking about with Trump's threats to North Korea, is the madman approach. You know, that's a strategy, evidently. Yeah. But no one will give him credit for having a strategy. So it's probably not. Probably not. We don't know what that was. Foreign policy by...
Yeah, so again, required a movie going by the... Anybody has to do with respect to the negotiations with North Korea, Arrival is the movie to see.
Yes, I totally agree. And even if you're not on the team and you haven't seen the movie, definitely go see the movie. It's going to give your mind a little workout. And by way of foreshadowing, I'm very fond of time travel movies. And there's some of that in. There's a great deal. The most complex time travel stuff I've ever run into is in Arrival. And it's subtle.
Yeah.
Again, like Dan was saying, the movie in general is subtle in a lot of ways. And it makes you think. And so that's why I went back two more times to see it, because I was studying the movie by the second, third time to pick up on the stuff I had missed. And it's pretty mind-blowing. It's good. But another one of my favorite time travel movies is something we are going to talk about in the future. And a current event came up with it just this week in Chicago, I believe.
Yeah,
right,
well,
John?
Time Traveler's Wife is, the more I hear about the book and the movie itself, this is I feel very disappointed that I haven't had a chance to do the view or read either. And it seems that the author of the book, Audrey Neffenegger,
yeah.
She was from Michigan, but spent a lot of her creative years in Chicago, either going to school primarily at Northwestern. And what happened was that when it come to her learning about books and bookstores, a lot of her time was spent at a bookstore that was featured in her book. And the bookstore it was called Bookman's Alley, which was located in Evanston. Its owner just recently died about 3 years ago. He had he sold his bookstore because of failing health. And so there was a nice feature in the past week in the Sun-Times about the fact that Audrey would frequent the store. The store is featured in the book. I don't think it make it into into the movie itself, but
it's an amalgam kind of. They combined the Newbery and library and the bookstore and all bunches of different stuff.
I
kind
think,
of they,
and
yeah,
which
they
leaves you more with Newbery Library than you are with a bookstore.
Yeah.
But what I've read, and I think I made it to this bookstore a couple times. I'm a collector of books, so when I read about the fact that the author who passed away, his wife allowed him to put, he had one room that he was not allowed to put a book. And I thought, oh, gee, I wonder, this sounds like a rule.
It does sound like a rule.
Which is good. I mean, but it reminded me of something probably my wonderful wife should have done with me. When you have almost 3,000 books in your two-bedroom condominium, although I would like to say that I think I've done a reasonably good job of keeping a semblance of order. We're not talking about stacks of books here. I'm not that kind of guy.
No, it's a library.
It's a couple of libraries that I've pulled together. But I spent a couple times at this bookstore, and this bookstore, I guess, I think the best way of describing it, bookstore, you know, came together back in the 70s, late 70s, and it's like, it's Harry Potter before Harry Potter. It had a magical sort of atmosphere feel to the store. And we have, obviously we're talking about an owner who was very, very vested in his occupation and did a great job and was a tremendous influence upon Audrey.
Audrey Neffenegger.
Yes. So putting all those things together, Bookman's Alley, there is actually a replacement bookstore that is there now. I haven't been up to take a look at it. But it might be worthwhile to look at. But it's definitely, what was interesting about this bookstore is that you would go down an alley to get to it. So it sort of had a kind of anticipation, kind of an atmosphere in itself, a mystery, like you're going down and going into a secluded, secret mystery store of sorts.
Yes,
That kind of lent itself very well to the anticipation of actually getting into the store, which was great. It was the kind of bookstore that had just enough disorganization that it had a lived in look, but its author was very, very knowledgeable and put his fingers on just about anything within the store. So, again, that was featured this last week in the Chicago Sun-Times, and it was a pleasure to read that, and it brought back some great memories for me. So.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. Yeah, but I think in the future we haven't really discussed it in detail. I would love to do a film segment on time travel movies because the overview of those is really there's some great stuff in there.
Well, I think that if we start with Time Traveler's Wife, and which sounds like something that hey, look, I don't need much pushing to watch that, and so
yeah, we should do it. We should do it. A couple of little pieces of, I want to follow up on the follow-up here. First of all, something interesting I just noticed in looking at our list of podcasts, and the podcasts are all listed at thebro.show, in case anyone wants to follow along. We actually had an additional, it wasn't a show about cancer, but we had a strong mention of cancer in May, believe it or not, John, May 6th, Ain't No Cure. We talked about some of the immunotherapies that are used.
Yes.
We had a little mention of that. So that was a little later than we thought. Another interesting thing, too, is, there have been some, in the way of fake news, this Trump transgender fixation thing. I don't even think Trump cares about this transgender thing, by the way. It's just something he's doing for his base because he's come out several times and said he doesn't care. And he's got lots of friends. LGBT friends in show business and whatever business that is he's in or was in. But in any case, he then tweeted out there's not going to be any more transgender people in the military. Now, the interesting thing about this piece of follow-up is that he was, by and large, totally ignored by the military. They just said, no, that's not going to happen. And now some people were kind of alarmed by this. Has the chain of command been broken? But they had a very clever way of handling it. They said, we do not respond to directives from Twitter.
Mm.
We have to have, if he goes through the normal process, then yeah, then that's a different thing entirely. So as we all know, that's just, that whole thing has been left twisting in the wind because it wasn't anything. It was just a diversion, shall we say. So that's an interesting bit of follow-up because we did talk about that, very early on, March 2nd. Is that my bathroom? So that was one episode we did. Now, in a larger scheme of things, people say, well, your t-shirt says surviving cancer and loss with sports, film, and fake news. So ostensibly, John and I are using our interests in these three subjects as a means of working together. And as we're doing that, we talk about our cancer day to day, and stuff like that, and it helps us deal with our treatments and deal with our disease. So in a roundabout way, all of these episodes and all the segments are actually about cancer in a way. But every once in a while, we do talk out loud about it, and we're going to do a little of
that
today.
Yes, I would like to say that our discussions, our podcast, are therapy for us because we both have a quest for knowledge, and we have things that we both are interested in. We have things that each of us are interested in. And so as a result, our needs in some way are this, our informational quest and our natural specializations might be slightly different. They have a way to complement each other. And I don't think either of us shies
Yep.
away from learning something new, even though it might not be down our beaten path. So that's what's kind of
Correct.
worked in our favor. And what happens, though, is every day we always ask how things are going. And sometimes the need to talk about what's going on in our lives becomes more important than the what we're working on in terms of the content of the podcast. Sometimes we just deal with the podcast. So that's kind of the...
Yeah. Sometimes it's interesting. I've noticed the dynamic too. We can reach the point where we're talking about our own situations where, you know, it's starting to get heavy. And then we'll go like, okay, well, we're not going to solve this today. Let's talk about baseball, right?
Yeah. And it's also, and it's kind of interesting. You started talking about, I think what brought us to the point of wanting to do a follow-up on cancer is the fact that we've both over the last several months had several challenges, but you know, when you look at them, it's all relative. By the way, did you ride your bicycle today, wherever you're going? Did you do this or did you do that? If you were really, really sick, it's sort of like my mother is 95 years old and she was telling me how bad she felt. It was on a Friday. Now, every Friday, my mother goes to the beauty shop at the age of 95. So it's like, so it's towards the end of the day and she says, I'm just not having a very good day. I'm not having a very good week. And I said to her, I said, Mom, did you go to the beauty shop this morning? And you know what was the most amazing thing, which I feel so thankful for that she could say this rather than me. We pause a little bit and she says, yeah, I guess I'm not feeling that bad. She knew
right.
where I was going and was,
right.
and I was, I felt a sense of relief that she was able to pick that up pretty quickly. And that's what kind of is just as important as the fact that we both have a mother that's obviously in a declining physical state.
Right.
But in terms of their mind, their mind is not exactly as crisp as it has been. But to see that kind of comment
and to pick up on the subtlety of it.
Yeah, was pretty good. And I mean, quite often those are the little pearls of wisdom that we look forward to as we continue to converse with our mom.
Yeah. By the way, a little aside, she called me at 10:39 last night.
Holy shit. Oh, holy shoot. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Hey, we can say shit, fuck, anything we want.
Okay.
Okay, so we're E rated. We're cool. So here's the deal. Yeah, she calls me at 9:39 last night, and I look at the phone right now and I go, the nighttime calls, John and I, well, let's be honest, we kind of avoid them.
Yeah, there seems to be a distinct relationship between her ability to be conversant in a more clear manner, depending upon how further along in the day it is. So 3 o'clock call in the afternoon
is
going to be much.
Here's the shocker. I got to give you the shocker, dude. That was one of the best calls. Best call I've ever had with mom in weeks. She was crystal clear.
Well, maybe she was asleep and woke up and came up with something. But yeah.
Well, no. She just hadn't talked to me today. And, you know, she calls me every day to see how I'm doing. And it doesn't have to be much. You know, she just wants to, sometimes she calls to see how I'm doing so that I can perk her up. And she's willing to do that for me too. And last night, the last thing she said to me, call me anytime if you get down.
Wow.
It's real sweet.
Well, yeah, she wants to continue being a mother, which is what's keeping her, you know, existing and living is having a purpose in life to help her sons.
Exactly. It's important.
Actually, in 12 days, we'll be seeing Green Day at Wrigley Field, which is the baseball mecca. It's the place to go for baseball if you've ever been for baseball because it's got so much history. It was built in 1914, became the home of the Cubs in 1916, and has ever since been their home. And it's considered it's sort of like one day this woman was working for me. And she said to me, she says, well, you know, I have tickets this afternoon for the ball game at Wrigley Field. And she says, I don't know if I can go or not. I said, look, going to baseball at Wrigley Field is like a religious experience. You will be taking a religious holiday this afternoon. Get out of the office. go to the ballpark.
On it, as you said, my trip to Chicago and our thing at Wrigley Field is a pilgrimage.
It'll give us a chance to revisit a variety of things and also experience new things. And, you know, it's amazing when you talk a lot about, you know, what your experience is, but I'm a very, very fortunate guy. I can get up in the morning. I can feel a little frustrated, but I can walk out on the Dearborn Parkway here at the Gold Coast and be exposed to an urban environment that is pretty, I mean, it's nice enough that you see tourists come down my up and down our street looking at the brownstones that are part of my neighborhood. And you know, when you find out that people that don't live in your neighborhood or don't live in your city find it captivating to be in your neighborhood, you know, you got something going. I walk to work, ride my bike to work.
That's right.
I'm subjected to an architectural museum every time I walk out. I feel very fortunate that you're coming up here and we get a chance to, towards the end of summer, experience some good times up here and also realize we'll do it within the constraints that are ours.
We're bag boys.
Yeah, we're the bag boys.
Papa's got a brand new bag.
About it. Good, I'll be talking to you tomorrow.